Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. 1 hour from now, by the way, Greg Cosell stops by. If you're into the NFL draft, a lot of bad teams have a couple of picks in the first round. Some good teams have two picks later in the first round. Greg Cosell, the prospects he likes, the prospects he's concerned about. And Joy Taylor is joining me today. Tiger in the Masters this weekend. I don't think he's going to win. I'm going to take Dustin Johnson, but I do like all the big hitters now in golf. All the Brooks Koepkas and the Rory McIlroys and the Dustin Johnsons. And the Tiger Woods is still long off the tee. How are you?
I'm great. Have you ever been to the Masters?
I have not been to the Masters. We were thinking about that podcast company I have, The Volume. We're thinking about setting up shop here in the next few years and going annually and covering it like a big event. So we have some big-time golfers on our staff that
I'm willing to be a reporter.
You could be a reporter.
I've always wanted to go to the Masters. It's on my list.
Well, there's two golf tournaments that I kind of feel like I will sit by the TV all weekend. My wife's out of town. U.S. Open, especially when it's at Pebble Beach. Pinehurst, Pebble Beach, and the Masters. Ryder Cup can also be a lot of fun. there's golf's got, it's the ultimate, you know what I mean? It's golf's most gentlemanly, most austere event.
Well, it's definitely gentlemanly. Yeah. But it's an experience.
Yes.
It's one of those bucket list sports. I haven't been to the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
I need to go to that, get a big hat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Win some money.
I think they're all good plans. So let's start with this. So, it used to be that when LeBron flirted with you, said something off the cuff, boy, I'd like to play with that guy or that guy, you'd call your agent. LeBron say he wants to play with me. Now LeBron doesn't even flirt. He hits on Steph Curry. Steph doesn't call his agent. Steph's like, I'm flattered. So LeBron said this on The Shop. This is very interesting, his show.
Steph Curry's the one that I want to play with, for sure, in today's game.
Why Steph?
Man, I love everything about that guy.
And
that
motherfucker. Lethal.
Lethal, man. When he get out of his car, you better guard him right from the moment he pulls up to the arena. As soon as he get out of his car, you better guard him. You might want to guard him when he get out of the bed.
The parking deck.
Swear to God.
That's not even flirting. That's like, I want to be a teammate of Steph Curry. And again, for years and years, if LeBron even casually said he was interested, casually flirted, you called your agent. Can I get to LeBron? But this is like the third or fourth time LeBron said, I want to play with this guy. And here is Steph Curry's latest response.
He got his wish, so he's the captain. He's picked me the last two All-Star games, so I don't know if that suffices, but I'm good right now. I mean, whenever you get the interest or curiosity of what it would be like to play with a arguably, MVP kind of caliber dude like he is and the greatest of all time. Cool. Like, it's amazing.
Right.
We all can live in that fantasy world, though.
They don't kid yourself. Everybody thinks Steph Curry's nice. Yeah, he's a killer, too. He's a killer, too. He's like, LeBron is trapped. They got no trade pieces, no picks. He's becoming Michael Jordan. Meaningless game, scoring a lot of points, end of his career. Steph Curry's like, I can still win titles. I got a great GM. I got a great roster. We got picks. We got trade assets. We got Jordan Poole, an emerging star. I got Clay, Draymond, Wiseman. Hey, Steph Curry sees LeBron's drowning, and he's not going to throw him a life preserver. Remember what Rick Bucher, I'm going to play a bite from Rick Bucher yesterday. Rick Bucher was on our show yesterday. LeBron has come to terms with a reality. And remember, LeBron bailed on D-Wade. That's his best friend in the league. So LeBron's bailed on coaches, Pat Riley, franchise, D-Wade. Here's what Rick Bucher said yesterday after they won in the bubble. and the team comes back and AD is out of shape, LeBron...
That Anthony Davis is not the guy. They found that out a year ago. And rather than moving Anthony Davis, they tried to find somebody to come in and change Anthony Davis. The criticism I've heard over and over and over again from inside the Lakers organization is that AD is not a worker, does not work hard. And it's part, and then when you get injured all the time, that raises the question, is it because you're injury prone or because you're not doing everything to get your body in premier shape?
And Steph knows it. Steph knows LeBron is trapped and is now MJ. Scoring a bunch of points, end of his career, bad roster, totally trapped. Why should I throw him a life preserver? By the way, Steph has watched KD leave him. KD this morning is everybody as good as LeBron or better. How's that going? So don't kid yourself. Steph's a tiger. And Steph's looking at Kevin Durant and LeBron James on any given night as good as anybody in the league. And they're both drowning. One guy's got wackadoo Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving and James Harden left. And the other guy's got a roster. There's no picks. There's no... Who are you going to trade and get for Westbrook? And so I think it's funny. Years and years ago, you know, it was LeBron was the A-lister in Hollywood. Ryan Gosling called. You listened. Now he's straight to rental. He's had back-to-back bombs in Hollywood, has LeBron. And Steph Curry's not the least bit interested. You saw the way he said it. I'm good here. Yeah, he is good there. Steph Curry is good. Jordan Poole, James Wiseman, Andrew Wiggins, Klay Thompson, a lot of picks, Steve Kerr, Bob Myers, great owner. Steph Curry knows they can reorganize this thing. They can tweak this thing. Don't kid yourself. Golden State, Steph knows I'm going to stay here with these guys. I'm not going to do a KD and leave a brain trust like us. I'm not going to be LeBron and bounce around the league all this mobility. Right now, Steph knows I'm going to end my career at the top of this league. KD's not. LeBron, who I've beaten in three or four finals, is not. And by the way, how you end matters. Go look at Tom Brady's career. Look at Brady and Manning for a long time. Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Look how Brady's ending his career and writing the final chapters. He's separated. Steph Curry's like, I'm one of the four or five greatest players in the last 10, 12 years. Durant, Steph, LeBron, and Steph looks at those guys and thinks, no. I'm going to be the Brady. Last 4 or 5 years, I'm going to stay in Golden State, and we're going to vie for a championship. I'm not throwing a life preserver to KD again, and I'm not throwing it to LeBron James. Even Nick Wright loves LeBron. Couldn't defend him based on what we've seen the last couple of years with LeBron James.
LeBron this year is going to finish averaging 38-6. And I think it's pretty damn clear that we all have to acknowledge and admit he's no longer in his prime. And the real signal he was no longer in his prime should have been last year's playoffs, where for the first time in a decade, he wasn't dominant in the postseason. He is still clearly one of the, at worst, seven best players in the sport, but he is no longer a walking finals berth.
Bingo. And Steph Curry's reply to LeBron's flirtation. Three words. I'm good here. Yep. So's the rest of the league. No longer can LeBron flirt and you call your agent. Now other stars just say, I'm flattered. I'm good here. All right. So Bruce Arians and Tom Brady. I said last week, got some pushback. I said, don't tell me Bruce Arians really wants to end his career upstairs in a cubicle. And don't tell me Brady, the most planned guy in the world, retires, unretires. He and Arians are not tight. Arians called him out multiple times. You don't call out superstars. I don't care if it's Messi, Ronaldo, Steph Curry. You don't keep calling out superstars. Bruce Arians did it again. He minimized Tom Brady's impact again yesterday on Phoenix Radio.
I get credit, and Brady gets way too much credit for what Byron does with our offense. And one of the reasons I hope he gets all the credit he deserves this year to get a head coaching gig. You know, he had about four or five teams real interested last year. I would anticipate him to be a head coach real fast.
I counted. I went and looked this morning. That is now eight times that Bruce Arians, since he and Tom Brady have joined at the hip, that he has either marginalized him, criticized him, or said, he's not that important, he gets too much credit. You don't do that with stars. You don't do that with superstars. And this goes back, the more Bruce talks, the more it proves there's turbulence here. There's never been a time that Bruce Arians in his career said, you know where I want to end my career? Upstairs in the office in a cubicle looking at college tape. In fact, he joked at his retirement press conference, I don't even know what my job is. Tom Brady nudged him. By the way, Tom Brady, you can't limit how important he's been in Tampa. In the 10 years in Tampa before Brady arrived, they had two winning seasons and never won a playoff game. Tom Brady arrived, they won a Super Bowl and vied for it. Brady is the singular reason the Tampa mess in the last decade has been interesting. That's it. They were 7-9 with the GM, the coach, the D-line, the linebacker. Brady is the reason. Just like Russell Wilson, you're going to watch in Denver this year, is the reason the Broncos will be a viable Super Bowl contender. He's it. Listen, Steve Jobs built Apple, and then he left Apple, and it died. It tanked. I'm not saying they don't have talented designers and programmers and engineers, but he cinched it all together when he came back, and it exploded. Same with Brady. I'm not saying they don't have a good GM. Arians can't coach. But stop minimizing what Brady meant. Stop. It's like 7-8 times now we counted. You can put them on the old bulletin board. 7-8 times Bruce Arians has tried to marginalize or minimize the impact of Tom Brady. We can stop now. Tom Brady has not gotten way too much credit. Tom Brady deserves a majority of the credit for tuning a losing franchise who'd had good coaches and good players but never had a legitimate Hall of Fame quarterback. They get him. They win a Super Bowl in a pandemic. They vied for a Super Bowl this year. And they'll be an NFC favorite with the Rams next year. That is singularly Tom Brady, regardless of who and how talented they are around him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I always tell young broadcasters, don't try to be cool. You're not cool, you're a broadcaster. I've seen people their entire career get obsessed with being cool. I've seen it with pro athletes. Be relatable. Most people aren't cool. The coolest sportscasters, never the most popular, the highest paid, and the coolest athlete. I mean, Michael Jordan was a once-in-a-lifetime super, super cool. Most great quarterback. Is Brady cool? Not really. He's just great. I don't even think Mahomes is cool. I just think he's great. I don't think Josh Allen's cool. The NBA players are in this kind of cultural zeitgeist where they're cool and they do Hollywood. And it's like, I don't think it's terribly relatable, but I don't think that's the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem in the NBA as the NFL continues to pull away is that it is somehow normalized stars missing games all the time. All the time. When you watch the NFL, any Sunday, all your favorite quarterbacks are playing. Burrow, Aaron, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Matt Stafford, all of them are playing. Maybe one is hurt. And he wants to play like Mahomes, and the staff won't let him. It's a badge of honor to play not at 100%. This is a sport where the strongest men in America tackle each other at full speed. But there's a sense of community in the NFL. Hey, man, it's raining, it's snowing, it's windy, I'm freezing my arse off, I hurt. Oh, no, I'm playing. The NBA, oh, my, it's an inconvenience if they're not given a week off for the All-Star game. I think fans can feel it. And attendance and ratings for the last 3 to 4 years have been down. And I will give Adam Silver, the commissioner, credit. He had a State of the Union yesterday. He's always been smart. I like him a lot. He's always willing to adapt. Those are two great qualities. But he acknowledged it is a big problem.
The greater concern to me is a trend of star players not participating in a full complement of games. And I think that's something we, together with the Players Association, need to address. Not standing here saying I have a great solution. Part of the issue is injuries. Are there things that we can do in terms of sharing information, resources around the league to improve best practices, rehabilitation, etc.?
Now, the Phoenix Suns are now starting to rest players. I'm good with that. They've been going 100 miles an hour all season. They play virtually every game. They play hard. They're wildly entertaining. In fact, I'd argue Phoenix Suns fans today would rather have their stars rest like Chris Paul for the playoffs. I'm totally for that. People have been doing that since the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You win 60 games, you rest your stars. These are long, long playoff series, and they're really intense, and the refs let more go in the playoffs. They get really physical. Get your veteran stars healthy. I don't want to see Chris Paul play until the playoffs now, right? That's different than this whole it is a pleasant surprise in the NBA now. On a back-to-back, if your starting five's all available. Oh, they're all playing tonight again? Now, I believe all regular seasons in all sports should be shortened. 162 games in baseball is ludicrous. You should be playing no more than 100. All you're doing is ratcheting up injury percentages. Here's what I would do if I was the NBA. I would shorten the season to 68 games. Owners now can give up some home dates because they make a majority of their money through television. I would get back-to-backs out. I mean, these are unique bodies. Seven-footers on planes arriving at 3 in the morning, have to get up for a shoot-around. Let's get rid of back-to-backs. By the way, if you shorten the season, you don't need back-to-backs. Also, I would extend the playoffs, create more urgent games. Let's get rid of 7-game playoff series. 5 max. I would have 3 in the opening round. I mean, really, first-round playoff upsets don't happen. Do I have to watch a good team hammer a bad team 4 times? I would also add minimum games played to awards. You have to play. If you get hurt, that's a you problem. But you have to play a minimum number of games to be all NBA. Guys get bonuses for that. Got to play a minimum number of games to win the scoring title, to be MVP, to be all pro. All this stuff that are tied into bonuses, minimum number of games. Listen, I think most players like to play. But it's gotten a little out of hand. David Stern, Iron Fist, Adam Silver, much more of a players commissioner. That's fine. It's a different world today. Silver did talk about shortening the season.
I also said in the past, if we have too many games, that's something we should look at as well. And it's the style of the game has changed in terms of the impact on their bodies. I think we got to constantly assess and look at a marketplace going forward and say, you know, what's the best way to present our product and over how long a season?
Let's stop being cool and let's start relating with fans. The NBA charges more per ticket than any league. It'd be nice to know when I'm driving my kids to a game, I'm going to get like the best players. Increasingly, that feels like a pleasant surprise. At least Adam Silver is acknowledging it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
I looked at the draft order in the top 10, and just listen to these teams. Jacksonville, Detroit, Houston, Jets, Giants, Carolina, Giants, Atlanta, Seattle, and the Jets. Those are some of the worst drafting teams in the NFL over the last 10 years. You're going to have a bunch of busts. There's going to be bad decisions in this draft. And it's not a star-driven draft. So if sometimes a star can overcome bad management, bad coach, bad roster. But a good player is really much more dependent on culture. That's why the Rams don't miss much on their draft picks. It's a very good culture. And this is a lot of bad draft teams and a lot of bad organizations. And the bust rate over the last decade in the top 10 picks is like 3 out of 10. I'll tell you three players. I'm not going to predict their busts. There's three players I think would worry me to draft in the top 10, and three that won't get drafted in the top 10 that I think are going to be stars in this league. Here's three players that would concern me. Derek Stingley, the corner for LSU. He had an unbelievable freshman year. He looked like he was an NFL player first year at LSU. Since then, hurt a lot, no interceptions in 2 years. He is so tantalizing as a prospect. Fast, long, totally looks the part. He doesn't intercept the ball, and he struggles to stay healthy. He'll be a top 10 pick. He would worry me. Evan Neal, Alabama offensive tackle. He's a mountain. He has really slow feet. I had two different general managers say, when he sets up shop, it's hard to get around him. But if you're quick, he's slow. He's 360 pounds. So you have some conditioning concerns, slow feet concerns, but he is a mountain of a man. And then Kenny Pickett, who has a fumble issue, a hand size issue, and a majority of his production came in his last year. He was a three-star prospect. You know, I just think I talked to a general manager who in the last 5 years has won a Super Bowl, and he graded him as a third-round prospect. But in the NFL, we overdraft quarterbacks. So Derek Stingley, Evan Neal, and Kenny Pickett will go top 10 probably. That would worry me. Here's three guys that won't go in the top 10, and I love all of them. Tyler Linderbaum is a center for Iowa. He will be one of the best run-blocking centers in the league within a couple of years. Not only a three-year starter, he's a team captain. He was a great wrestler. He just, every time I watched him in run-blocking situations, he dominated his man. Love him. Kenneth Walker at Michigan State, another Big Ten player. Led the college football, all of college football, in yards after contact. So he can run away with you or run over you. Never fumbles. Two fumbles in his career. Great ball security. He is fast. He is clever. You can hit him. He's great after contact. He is a total workhorse. He'll probably go in the second round. I would love to have him on a roster. Another Big Ten guy. Some are saying he's the fifth best pass rushing edge. I think he's number two. Is the kid from Purdue, George Karloftis. He was, by the way, Alabama wanted him, Oklahoma. He was a big-time prospect. Again, relentless, totally committed, great motor. 30 tackles for losses in the last 3 years, constantly in the backfield. Look at him. He just decimates people. I would not be surprised if he's not better than Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon, who got way more hype. This kid is, every game I watched him play, monster. I think if he was better than Aiden Hutchinson as a pro, I would not be shocked. He is really, really good. So the three guys I like just happen to be Big Ten players. And two of the three guys I think are a little overhyped are SEC players. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my takeaway on what I've watched. All I know is the bust rate in the top 10 is about 30% in the last decade.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Greg Cosell, 42 years NFL Films. And he's listening to me, and he watches all this tape, and he's like, what is Coward talking about? That kid from Purdue, now I'm just going on games I watched, that Karloftis kid. On the games I watched, I saw Purdue. I saw him play four or five times as a college player. I don't know. You've seen tape. You think he's any good?
I think he's got an issue that I'm very curious to see how it plays out. He's incredibly strong with his upper body, Colin, and his hands. He was a shot put champion in high school, but his lower body doesn't support it. His lower body is a little inflexible. And there are times when he starts rushing the quarterback and gets blocked and his feet stop because his lower body does not really support what his upper body can do. So I'm very curious to see what he does in the league. There's a part of me that thinks he'd be really good if you move him inside and that he could work, you know, as a three technique against guards. So we'll see. But he does not have the kind of flexibility in his lower half that you'd ideally like to see from an edge player.
Who's the most impressive prospect that you've seen on film in the draft?
The most impressive. Wow. I'll give you one guy who I think, and and this is not most impressive in terms of I think he should be the number one prospect, but I think he's not being spoken about at all, and it's simply because he was hurt for the large, large part of this season and only played at the end of the year, which he did not have to do knowing he was coming out. And that's the wide receiver from Georgia, George Pickens, who I think if he had played a full season, we'd be discussing him as a top 10 pick.
Wow. Boy, that Georgia team, they had a lot of players. I'm telling you, Greg, when you watch Georgia play Alabama, it was one of the rare times that I watched Alabama under Saban, and I thought Georgia had better players.
You know, they killed me, Colin, on defense. They kill me because I have to watch their games over and over and over because on defense, I believe they have eight players who are going to be in this draft, and I obviously can't watch eight players at one time when I watch their tape. So I have to watch Georgia over and over and over, and but you have to because you've got to really learn what the players are.
Kayvon Thibodeau for Oregon, number one high school player. He's not big. His size worries me a little. Overhyped, or what do you make of him?
I think there are some concerns with him for sure. I think Thibodeau has some get off. I think he has some quick twitch as far as his get off. I think he's strong with his hands, but I don't think he's a great bender. I think he struggles to flatten his rush path when he gets to the top of his rush arc. And I think that's a little bit of a factor. He's got some lower body stiffness, and I think that's a concern when you think of him as a great pass rusher. In some ways, Colin, when I watched his tape, and I watched his tape last summer from the 2020 season, they only played, I think, five or six games. I watched them all. And then I watched, of course, a ton of his tape from this year. In some ways, he reminds me of Jadeveon Clowney. Guys who are a little stiff, they're strong going forward. They've got some speed to power to them, but they don't bend exceptionally well. There's some lower body stiffness.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just funny, too. It's also the Pac-12, and sometimes, I'll be honest, with the top prospects, not counting quarterbacks, some of the top defensive prospects in the Pac-12, I'm like, they don't face as good offensive lines as the Big Ten and the SEC. Sometimes I'm a little conference sensitive on that. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I think if you put him in the SEC, he's maybe not as dominant as he is in the Pac-12. Does that make sense?
Sure. I mean, that. Well, right, but those are numbers in a sense. I'm looking at his traits and his attributes and his characteristics, and well, I just don't think he has exactly what you look for if people want to talk about him as a dominant edge player. I don't think he's quite that guy. Let me ask you about a guy who, to me, is a really interesting guy to evaluate, Drake London, in your neck of the woods.
So he was a basketball player. I heard about Drake London his junior year in high school from a USC recruiting coordinator who said, there's a receiver, people know him as a basketball player, he's going to be a first-round pick. He told me this 5 years ago. And so I watched Drake London very quickly. He walked into USC, and as a freshman at practice, was the second-best receiver they had after Michael Pittman. Tough, very hard for corners to bring down individually. A workhorse. Before he got hurt, they were targeting him 15 times a game.
I know.
Again, tough. Don't think the basketball. You know, whenever you say a tight end played basketball, you think finesse. He is not a finesse receiver. Long, good catching radius. He's not going to pull away from you. So that's, you got to scheme him open sometimes. I think he can be very dangerous in the red zone. Good kid, hard worker. Injury doesn't concern me too much. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, the big question I have with him is there's no real twitch and suddenness to his movement. I don't see him as a boundary X. I've seen a lot of people compare him to Mike Williams and Mike Evans. I don't think he's that kind of receiver at all. I think that, first of all, he made a ton of contested catches in college.
Yes.
And he was an above-the-rim player. And I just wonder if you can live like that in the NFL as a dominant, dominant receiver.
Yeah.
He'll be a good player. There's a part of me that sees him as a really good slot receiver. You know, I almost think of Marcus Colston, that kind of player.
Yeah.
But I don't see him in the way some do based on tape study as a Mike Williams or a Mike Evans.
So I've said this about Kenny Pickett. He plays too casually for me. He's a little loose. I think he's athletic, but his delivery is a little loose for me. I don't think I don't think his ceiling's terribly high. He feels like kind of a guy. If somebody's going to give him a shot, I think he'd need to be surrounded by a lot of talent. I had one GM who's really good, and one of the top GMs in the league say they had him evaluated as an early third round pick.
Right.
What is your takeaway on Pickett?
You know, and I'd love to know the reason why. One thing I heard at the combine quite a bit was that he doesn't have a special trait. And the thing when people talk about quarterbacks is I always want to know how they define traits, because, you know, you hear about quarterbacks, let's say, that have really big arms, and they say, you know, he's got a lot of traits. Well, my guess is, Colin, if you spoke to quarterback coaches and guys who really study quarterbacks in detail, having a power arm would not be at the top of the list, or the ability to run fast would not be at the top of the list. What makes for a great quarterback in the NFL? Why is Tom Brady a great quarterback? Why was Drew Brees a great quarterback? You know, I happen to like Kenny Pickett. I think the hand size, if you speak about fumbles, yes, that's a concern to some degree. But I think the way in which he plays, his feel for the game, I think he's a really good prospect. Now, again, that's a relative term. Am I suggesting he's the top pick in the draft? No. But I think you also have to be careful. I heard you say that he only had the one good season. So did Joe Burrow. You know, I think you have to evaluate each player as an individual.
Okay, so tell me about Kenneth Walker, the running back at Michigan State.
Yeah.
Because I really like him.
Yeah, I like him.
I like him a lot. He doesn't fumble. He's tough. He can break away speed. I look at him and I think he's going to go to the second round, and somebody's going to find themselves with, like, Denver got Javonte Williams, and you look up and you're like,
yeah,
we have a top 10 running back we're not paying anything to. What do you make of Kenneth Walker?
Yeah, I like Kenneth Walker, and it's funny you say that. It's just a function of running backs now and where they're kind of seen in the league. But I liked his tape. I thought the way I described him, and it just came to mind as I was watching him, I think there was a little bit of jazz musician to him. He's kind of a free-flowing back who looks for space. He's got improvisational ability. He's built compact, low to the ground. He's got piston-like feet. He drops his pads. He will attack defenders. I think there's an awful lot to like about Kenneth Walker. And for whatever it's worth, Colin, you know, people have different views of this. He tested exceptionally well at the combine. So I think he's a really good prospect.
There's a lot of receivers this year. The kid at Alabama, Jameson Williams, ACL injury. I think Alabama could have beaten Georgia, but both their 1,000-yard receivers got hurt. Do you like the wide receiver class? Do you like him? I don't think it's quite as good at the high end as the last couple receiver drafts.
No.
What's your takeaway on Jameson Williams at Alabama and the class as a whole?
Yeah, I like Jameson Williams, but I don't think there's a Ja'Marr Chase in this class, if that's what you're saying, because I agree with you on that. But Williams, and he'll be fine. I mean, we now know guys coming back from ACLs, they're fine. There are not many receivers with his flat-out vertical speed and big playability, and that makes him an impact receiver and a game changer. And one thing I heard at the combine over and over and over again, Colin, from coaches, is you know what offenses are looking for now? They're not looking to run the ball and all that. They're looking for explosive plays. And Williams is a receiver that is going to give you explosive plays. And overall, I think the receiving class, there's a lot of different kinds of receivers,
yes,
which is why it's always hard for me to make lists. I mean, I cannot compare Jahan Dotson to Treylon Burks. I don't think they're comparable players. I think they're both really good prospects, and I really like Jahan Dotson. I don't know your feeling about him. I think Jahan Dotson is going to be a really good pro. He's very tough and competitive for a smaller receiver, and he can get over the top of the defense.
All right, the preemptive number one's Aiden Hutchinson. You know, he's not as big as J.J. Watt, but plays with like a T.J. Watt motor. I think he's very good. I don't think he's going to miss. I think he's going to be a really – I don't know if he's a star. He's not as physically impressive as Chase Young. Maybe he's not quite a Bosa, but what do you make of Aiden Hutchinson? What's the tape say?
Yeah, I like Hutchinson. He'll be a good player, and you're correct. Hutchinson, you know, he plays with his hands, his hips, through his feet. You wouldn't say he's sudden or twitchy. You know, I don't think he's T.J. Watt. I don't think he's that kind of pass rusher. But to use a term that I've heard people use, he can rush from tip to tip, meaning he can attack the high side of offensive tackles on the outside. He can attack the low side with a great inside counter move. And so I think he'll be a very good player. And what you know what really stood out, and this is why I love watching full games of defensive players. You can't just watch highlights, and I'm fortunate to be able to do that with the coaching tape. He had a rush plan in every game. So he has a feel for how to go about attacking an offensive tackle. He's not simply relying on athletic ability. He clearly had a plan.
I love that. All right, Greg, you know I'm into this stuff. I am
a- I love it, Colin. We can do this all day.
My wife's out of town for a week. I may just call you at home and talk about tight ends.
Hey, that's no problem. The problem is I'm not home very much. I'm in my office here at NFL Films watching tape.
Great seeing you again, Greg.
Thanks, Colin.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Rob Domofsky is a very, very good Green Bay Packer reporter. He is insinuating or suggesting the Packers should trade a first-round pick late in the first round and a fourth-round pick to go after a DK Metcalf. So there's a story out today. The Jets called the Seahawks on DK Metcalf. And, you know, Seattle said not interested. I think Seattle would have to consider taking a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick for DK Metcalf. They would ideally like two first because Seattle whiffs on some draft picks, so it's a volume game for them. They need more picks, not just a high pick. And I also think Green Bay is desperate. First of all, you can draft a wide receiver. Good luck with Aaron Rodgers and a rookie wide receiver. I mean, they didn't even look at Amari Rodgers last year out of Clemson as a slot receiver. Like, he didn't even get into the game plans, okay? He was a return guy. So Aaron's very precise, very demanding. DK Metcalf comes in immediately and gives them a one. I don't think he's one of the top five or six strongest ones. He's not Stephon Diggs, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, DeAndre Hopkins, but he's a one in most eyes. And they don't have it. And right now, then Amari Rodgers and Randall Cobb can be your slot guys. And Alan Lazard can be your four. Maybe you draft a couple of guys. But if you're depending on a rookie to come in and get 90 catches with Aaron Rodgers, it's not going to happen. And again, this is the downside. Aaron Rodgers is a 13.5% cap hit this year. He's a 14% cap hit next year. So you're going to have to figure out a way to get the DK Metcalf contract in. It will not be easy. But you cannot, in 2022, you cannot compete against the Rams, the Bucks, the Chiefs, the Bills. I mean, good God, they couldn't beat the Niners at home because of Deebo Samuel and George Kittle. They don't have enough weapons. They don't have any on the perimeter. So if Rob Domofsky is suggesting two picks for DK Metcalf, now Seattle, you may argue, good God, he's their best player. Certainly an argument to be made. What it basically says is you are literally starting from the ground floor. Seattle is just saying, we're going to be a top five draft team next year. Get our next quarterback. We're giving up everybody. It's a hard decision. As Joy said, if you give me a first and something else, I have to take the call if I'm Seattle. If it's just a first, I'm not sure. Because I'd probably go draft another receiver anyway. Because Seattle, I don't think Seattle's receiving core is great. I think it's competent. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Swain, the young receiver from Gainesville, Florida, Florida Gators, they're fine. I don't think they're elite, but it's a good group. It's a solid. It's one of the strengths of their team. They don't have many. But it's something to think about. This Green Bay situation, you know, Aaron's different. He's not one of these guys. And by the way, in fairness to Aaron, Tom Brady doesn't love rookie receivers either. Brady likes his Gronk and his ABs. He connected very quickly with Mike Evans, but not so much with Tyler Johnson, who Tampa Bay drafted out of Minnesota. Good player, but he was a rookie receiver. So Tom's can be finicky on rookie wide receivers too. A lot of these veteran guys are. They get into habits. Peyton Manning, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. You're not going to bring some kid in from the ACC and I'm going to trust him to run all my routes. So DK Metcalf, Packers, I think makes a ton of sense. The downside is you're sending him in the same conference. I mean, by the way, Detroit sent Stafford to the Rams. Detroit's not winning the Super Bowl anyway. You know, I'm going to send a guy wherever. Now, I'm not going to send Russell Wilson across the street in my division twice a year, but if I had to trade Russell Wilson to an NFC team and I got more picks, I would do it. I mean, I think we have to get over that. I mean, I see it all the time now, more and more. GMs are just like, hey, I want to get what I get. I'm not going to get paralyzed by I might see you every other year in a game.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So the big story today, Joy was talking about Tom Brady. was close to joining the Dolphins as a
minority owner.
And then the Brian Flores story blew up and Tom backed out, came back to play for the Buccaneers. Also in that, it was going to be a Sean Payton, Tom Brady package deal. Payton was going to go coach the team. So, and I, here's what, listen, we all know Sean Payton's coming back. He's young. He's going a million miles an hour. The Cowboys is the obvious one if Mike McCarthy flails, because Payton used to be there. He's got a house there. And he would be, you know, if you gave Dak Sean Payton, Dak's going to be a better version of Dak. There's no question about that. So, and I like Dak. Dak's a B-plus quarterback. Sean Payton with him gets him to an A-minus quarterback.
Like, it would surprise me, though.
No. It wouldn't or would?
It would surprise me.
If he goes to Dallas.
That's not what Dallas does. That's not what Jerry Jones likes. He likes a coach he can
control.
You know, that's been the history.
Here's another one I'll throw at you for Sean Payton. I'll just throw it out there. Chargers' Brandon Staley. Second year in a row, doesn't get Justin Herbert into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. I think they have to make the playoffs this year.
It feels like it. Like, he was the best player. He was the best quarterback in the league last year that didn't make the playoffs. They had some, I think, very, very questionable fourth down play calls.
He brought in some big names.
The Chargers roster is a playoff roster. Now, the division's tough, but it's a playoff roster. Now, Chargers will give coaches an extra year. They don't have a history of blowing guys out.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. In that building, there was a lot of going back and forth on Brian Daboll, the offensive guy, or Brandon Staley, the defensive guy. And ultimately, the owners, the Spanos family, liked Brandon Staley. And I like him. I think he's bright. But he's a defensive guy. They didn't get to the playoffs. That Raider game, some coaching decisions. And you're in Los Angeles now. Again, you don't make the playoffs in L.A. Got Lincoln Riley in town. I got Sean McVay in town. Dodgers are winning. It's a very competitive town. You fall off the relevance map in an hour in Los Angeles.
Well, you know, I'd sit here and say that there probably won't be that many openings next year.
There's going to be none.
I did not think that there were going to be any, and there's been 10 changes at the coaching position this year. But outside the Cowboys, who I definitely think is an option, but I would be surprised if Jerry Jones does not turn any kind of power over to coaches.
Sean's not going to go anywhere without a good quarterback. So Dak and Justin, and I'm not saying the Chargers are. I'm saying Sean Payton's going to do a Phil Jackson.
Panthers could be somebody who...
They don't have a
quarterback, right? The Jets might be someone that...
If you love Zach Wilson, but... I mean...
I'm just looking at teams that might possibly be in the coaching situation.
Oh, yeah. I think the Jets are top of the list. I think Carolina's right next to them. Who else?
I mean, maybe Detroit, but I think that they'll probably stick with Dan Campbell for at least 3 years. Yeah, there's not a whole... I mean, everyone else has hired everybody, unless Pete Carroll retires.
Oh, Pete Carroll's one. Yeah.
But I think they're going to let him retire.
Right. Kingsbury just got an extension. McVay, nobody's, you know.
Vikings just hired a new coach. Broncos just hired a new coach.
No. I mean, we're going to have 8 new coaches next year. You think it's nuts, but you start.
I know. But
not many obvious ones. Jacksonville's got, you know, a lot of these shaky franchises just hired new guys.
Right.
Frank Reich could be in a little heat, too. I mean, there's 3. We're going to have 3 times that. I'm just saying, if the Chargers don't make the playoffs and Justin Herbert continues to ascend as an elite top 5 or 6 quarterback, you're going to get a lot of heat and become irrelevant very quickly in this town. That fourth down stuff he did this year, I mean, I like the analytics. I thought it was Looney Tunes going for it deep in your own territory.
Yeah, you got to be reasonable about it, though.
Yeah, like Chargers kind of got mocked for that stuff. That's not good.